that it's fortunate that there's a variety of different traditions within Buddhism, and they all have different emphasis. And I think this is a really fortunate thing because different people have different ways of approaching a spiritual practice. And so, although all the Buddhist traditions center on the main basic principles, they have slightly different approaches because people of different cultures approach things differently, people with different personality types approach things differently. So the fact that there's like this wide range that we can actually look at is very fortunate, and that this can help us really also appreciate the Buddha as a skillful teacher more and more because there is such a diversity. Okay. And then the next point is that we live when and where there's a Sangha community following Buddhist teachings. In other words, Sangha community, this one is, I found in the West, it's a little bit tricky. Okay, because most of the people in the West say Sangha and they mean just anybody who comes to a Dharma center. But in the strict sense, okay, in the strictest sense, the word Sangha means any particular individual, be they ordained or lay, who has direct realization of emptiness. That's the strictest meaning of Sangha. And when we say that we take refuge in Sangha, it's in those particular individuals that have direct realization of emptiness that we take refuge in. Okay. Then the next gradation of the meaning of Sangha is a community of four or more monks or nuns. Okay. And so often in the East when they talk about the Sangha, it's referring to an ordained monk or nun. Somehow in the West, the word has gotten really diffuse and refers kind of broadly to anybody who's a Buddhist or thinking about being a Buddhist or whatever you want to call it. But kind of, I think in this regard here, it's talking specifically about a Sangha community of monks and nuns. Of course, you know, in the West, we're very lucky to have the, the community of lay people around as supportive friends that help us and inspire us in our practice. But here, it's also good, I think, to appreciate the fact that there are Sangha communities of monks and nuns. Now, this is, I know, a very difficult point, but leave it to me. I always stick my feet in the difficult point. So here goes another one. because I find that sometimes here in the West, people don't seem to appreciate ordained beings very much. People often tend to feel that, you're ordained, well, you're just kind of exactly like me and I'm not ordained and we can practice the Dharma the same and so, you know, no reason for you to sit in front or no reason for you to do this. Go out and get a job, you know, go get a job, earn your way, pay rent, pay for your food, make yourself useful, you know. And so, you know, very often in the West, people have that kind of attitude towards monks and nuns. And I think that, they're certainly entitled to their opinion, but I think that there is a value in a society about having a Sangha community of ordained people who don't go out and get jobs and pay rent and things like that, in a sense, for a few reasons, okay? First of all, because ordained people, they have dedicated their whole life to the Dharma practice. That's the whole purpose of their life. So they have more time for practice. Yeah. So I think it's something nice to appreciate about people who are ordained. And I'm not saying this because I'm in robes. Don't take me wrong. I realize I'm somehow, excuse me, I'm becoming a little bit defensive teaching, but maybe you'll understand why. and I'm not saying this about me, but you know, just in general, if you have more time to practice, you're going to penetrate deeper in the studies, you're going to be able to make more progress in your meditation. And I think that it's nice to value people who have done this because they set a good example for us and because they have developed qualities that we can then learn from. Okay? So I think that it's very valuable for a society, whether it's a Buddhist society or a Catholic one or whatever, to have groups of people that are really dedicated to the religious practice who can afford more time, you know, and go deeper into it than the majority of people, because then those people become like experts and they can help the other people in the society. Also, you know, secondly, because when you have a Sangha community, I think it's participating in society, but the existence of a Sangha community always poses to society the question of what is the value of human life? What is the meaning of life? So I think it's good, you know, that we live in societies where there are groups of religious people, because they look, just by their lifestyle, they're posing that question to us. Yeah? What do we want to do with our lives? What is valuable? Okay? So I think in this point here that, you know, we live when and where there's a Sangha community that's following Buddha's teachings. I mean, that's nice, because the ordained people set an example. They pose that question to us. They know more than we do, or more are generally more advanced, and so they can teach us. Now, don't get me wrong. This does not mean that all ordained people are wonderful, okay? And it doesn't mean that all ordained people are better than lay people. That's not the case at all. In fact, you know, in Asian societies, people have this view very much. The lay people think only the ordained people can practice. And I'm a lay person, so all I do is bow down and offer money and some incense, and that's my Dharma practice. I can't practice because I'm not ordained. And that, you know, that view is very prevalent in Asian countries, and it's completely incorrect. Okay? Lay people can practice the Dharma very well. Okay, you have all the abilities to practice, and you should rejoice about that, and you should use them. Okay, and one thing that can inspire you to use your life, and one resource that you can have along the path, is people who are ordained. Okay, or even lay people whose whole life has been dedicated to the Dharma practice. Okay, in other words, having specialists in the field, that's an asset to us, you know. They're not a challenge to us that we have to make ourselves equal or whatever, but they're an asset that, you know, these people can really help us on the path. Communicating here? Yeah. So this is just, you know, to help us realize the resources we have on the path, the potential that we have, you know. And like I said, lay people can practice very well, and you should put energy into practice. And this is one thing that I especially appreciate about teaching in the West, is that the lay people really want to learn and they want to practice. Yeah? Very often in Asian countries, the lay people, you know, I mean, like at His Holiness's teaching, they come Ma and Pa with their thermos of Tibetan tea and the kapse, and they make a picnic. You know, well, I mean, you people aren't sitting here eating cookies while I'm teaching, and I'm really glad, you know. I mean, it's kind of like you're listening, and you're taking notes, and you're aware, and you're thinking, and you're questioning, and you're doubting, and, you know, and you go home and you think about that. And that's fantastic. Yeah. And I really find in the West, you know, people have much more, you know, lay people have much more enthusiasm for the practice than in many Asian countries. And then the last one is that we live when and where there are others with loving concern. Okay? In other words, there's patrons, meaning benefactors or sponsors for our practice. There's teachers. And so all these people, they give us the condition in which we can practice. And so, for example, you know, the idea of having a benefactor, I mean, your boss, whoever your employer is or whoever your customers are, wherever you get your money, I mean, these are people we should be very grateful to, because without them, we wouldn't have the material sustenance to practice. Yeah? So we live in a time and place where we don't, you know, we aren't starving. Yeah? We aren't homeless. We have the material wherewithal to practice. And this is a great blessing, because when, you know, we don't have just the basic necessities of life, then we have to spend so much time and energy in getting them, and then we don't have that time for the practice. So the fact that those things have come to us so easily is really a very great fortune, because it frees us to really use our time for the practice. Similarly, we have access to teachers. And this is, again, a very, very important thing because we need people to learn from. Yeah, we can't, books help us a great deal. We can get a lot out of books, but, you know, you can't fight back with a book. And you can't ask questions, and you, a book can't set an example for you. Yeah? So the fact that we have living teachers is a very important thing, and that we have access to them. And especially, I mean, us in the situation in America changed so much, in the 16 years since I first met Buddhism. Because when I first met Buddhism, very difficult to get teachings here. So I had to pack up and go to India. You know, you people don't. Yeah, you can stay here. I mean, you get door-to-door service. Gelug comes here. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, this is a very great fortune because many people have to go and to other places. And even if you look in the history of Buddhism, you know, how many Tibetans had to cross the Himalayas and into India? How many Chinese had to go overland, you know, through Central Asia to get to India? You know, or people in Sri Lanka or Indonesia, which used to be Buddhist, riding on ships for years and years and years to be able to get teachings. And so, you know, people had to put so much energy into just finding a teacher in the past and finding a place where the teachings were and finding the text. And when you read some of these stories, you know, of the pilgrimages that people did from other countries to India to get the teachings and the hardships they went through, I mean, it's like, wow, these people were so dedicated. They were extraordinary. You know, they were willing to undergo anything because they really value the spiritual path. They value the Dharma. You know? And in comparison, we have it so easy. Yeah? I mean, you get in a car and you drive in a nice, comfortable car for 15 minutes or half an hour. And that's it. You know, I mean, you don't have to worry about bandits on the road and starving and, you know, and all this other stuff. Yeah, and teachers come here. So, I mean, we have really quite a fortunate situation. That is something to think about. Yeah. So in all these things here, as we're going through them, you know, you meditate in such a way that you examine, you know, do I have this quality? You go through, you know, first the 8 and then the 10, and do I have this? You know, and what value does this give to my life? And if I didn't have it, would it be easy to practice? Okay? And so in that way, you come to appreciate everything that you have going for you in your life. So this meditation is very good for overcoming depression. You know, like when you get depressed and you think, oh, everything's rotten in my life and nothing's going well and I can't practice and my mind's berserky and this country's crazy. Nah. Then you just sit down and you do this and you see, you know, that really we have a lot going for us, yeah, in terms of the practice. So it's something to rejoice and feel very happy about. And so the purpose of doing that, like I said, is to make the mind joyful so that we get enthusiastic about making our life meaningful. So in the text, they say that when you do this meditation, you want to aim at the end to have a feeling like a beggar would feel if all of a sudden he realized he had a jewel in his pocket. Yeah? So it's like, you're a beggar, you're completely down and out, and there's a jewel in my pocket. Wow, what can I do? You know, I'm so fortunate. What am I going to do? So the same thing, you know, in some way we've kind of had this feeling of mental poverty so long, you know, my life's a mess and da 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 da. And now it's like, wow, I have so many things going for me. This is incredible. What can I do with my life? How can I make my life meaningful? So, I mean, if we're going to update the example, it's like, you know, if you're a little kid in a toy store and all of a sudden you realize you have a MasterCard. And you can use it. You know, I mean, it's like that. You know, I have a MasterCard and a toy store. You know, wow! It's like the whole world opens up in front of your eyes, what you can do. And you're not going to just sit there and lounge around and play tiddlywinks. You're going to go buy everything you can. So in the same way, you know, when we see that we have so much going for us in our life, then we'll really make an effort to practice the Dharma, because we'll see that our opportunity now is quite special and quite rare, and we'll really want to make the most of it, and not just fritter it away, you know, wasting our time on silly things that kind of don't really bring any meaning or purpose to our lives.